8 of Desified. Today I want to welcome Hansini. Hansini is an organizational psychology specialist with a background in people and culture, leadership, and diversity and inclusion at work. She collaborates with organizations to help create better work cultures for their people, and Hansini is currently doing her PhD in psychological safety and inclusive leadership. She is also an avid hiker, a big foodie, and loves spending quality time with friends and family. So welcome, Hansini.
Thank you, Ranu. Thank you for having me. Lovely to be here.
Of course. So we have chatted previously about why we other others. Can you tell me a little bit about this? Why do we other others?
Yeah, absolutely. This is such a great topic, and thank you for having me to talk about it. We other others, so as a concept, it's a verb called othering. This can happen at a group level or at an individual level. Othering happens when we see individuals or groups of people as not fitting in with our expected image or the characteristics of our social group, and because of that, we see them often in a negative light. So it is essentially a case of fearing what we don't know. And othering can be conscious. So for example, a manager can consciously decide not to invite a minority employee to a social event, you know, say work drinks, because they assume that the employee would not fit in or enjoy this activity. But most of the time, othering can really be subconscious, like we don't even realize that we are doing it. So for example, during a job interview process, a recruiter may subconsciously favor candidates who come from a similar background to theirs. And this may result in discrimination against a person or a certain group of people. When we other others, we think, we feel, or we behave negatively towards those who are different from us. And these differences could be actual differences or perceived differences. You know, different values, different preferences, different perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. And othering is often the root of discrimination, prejudice, bias, and it starts from the very ground level family unit to peer groups, to work, to the larger social and political groups as well.
That is so interesting. I've never thought about sort of the psychology and the science behind that. So thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about the science behind this. Why do we do this? And do we even know when we create biased perceptions about those who don't fit our mold?
The science. I actually love talking about the psychology and the brain science behind why we act the way we do, right? The science behind othering traces back to our evolutionary past, where creating in-groups and out-groups was crucial for survival. So essentially, people who were able to rally a social group around them, they were able to access the limited resources for themselves and fight with the out-group, you know, I'm making air quotes here, fight with the out-groups or the others to hold on to these resources. While this is survival-based in the past, it manifests in different ways today. For example, discrimination based on race, religion, immigration status, or political affiliations, or even in more subtle ways like lifestyles, values, body shape, the way people talk, the way people dress, you name it, right? And there are, of course, multiple, I would say dozens of theories that you can use to explain why we other others. So one important explanation comes from the concept of classical conditioning. Classical conditioning is a subconscious process where we associate factors that are otherwise unrelated together through a process of social conditioning. So think about how media portrays certain groups of people. So we often see this happening, which is quite sad, really, how people of color are portrayed using negative language. And this can cause people who consume this media to fear people who belong to certain groups, and there's no logical basis for it. I actually had this conversation with a friend a couple of weeks ago in relation to what happened in Sydney, Australia recently, and the language media used in talking about reports, can I do that again? Because I feel like I lost.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with like, okay. So there are multiple theories to explain why we are the others. And one important explanation comes from the concept of classical conditioning. This is a subconscious process where we associate factors that are otherwise unrelated together because of repeated social conditioning. For example, if the media consistently portrays people of color negatively, seeing a person of color can trigger fear even without a logical basis. Think of the language that media uses when it comes to reporting news. If a brown or black person commits a crime, they're a terrorist, they're an immigrant, you know, they're not one of us. And when a white person does the same, they're someone's son, they're one of us, they're a helpless person failed by the system. This language really matters. Now, imagine us, or the consumers of this media, who repeatedly and subtly get conditioned by these language and images. Over time, we can start creating negative associations related to a single person or an entire group of people because of this. And also, as humans, we seek information that that confirms our pre-existing beliefs. So this then becomes a confirmation bias that creates a cycle that takes a lot of self-awareness to break away from. So classical conditioning is one explanation, of course. And another explanation is the social identity theory, which involves creating in-groups and out-groups and associating positive qualities with the in-group, so that's the group that we put ourselves in, and negative qualities with the out-group. And this can drive our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Yeah.
That is so interesting, because I have noticed that they use this kind of language in the news and media, but I never really thought about the science behind it. So yeah. It's really kind of a light bulb moment for me, because that impacts our ideology as well and how we respond to people of different cultures.
Absolutely.
What do you think are the consequences of othering others who don't fit our mold?
Oh, lots. Discrimination, prejudice, social exclusion, perpetuating stereotypes, or on a larger scale, reducing social and economic opportunities also. So in cultures that emphasize conformity, fitting in cultures that emphasizes conformity and fitting in, individuality is usually suppressed. Sorry, I don't know why I'm losing. Yeah. I'm going to start that again.
Sure.
Do you want to ask the question again? Or?
Sure.
Yeah.
What are the consequences of othering others who don't fit our mold?
Lots. Discrimination, prejudice, social exclusion, perpetuating stereotypes, and on a larger scale, reducing social and economic opportunities also. In cultures that emphasize conformity and fitting in, individuality is often suppressed, and we almost punish people for being different. People may feel like they need to hide their true selves, which is a really hard thing, right? And we see this impacting all sorts of relationships, and it's so common. You know, othering can also have social consequences. When you feel the pressure to fit into a box, or risk being subjected to gossip, social exclusion, or in many cases, overt and covert punishment even, that can be quite a detrimental thing. Being othered can cause people to have an internal conflict where they're not sure about who they are as individuals versus who they're supposed to be, which can lead to a loss of identity, a lot of emotional distress, and it can even affect mental and physical well-being. So that's a lot of consequences that can result from experiencing othering. In the workplace, othering can limit people's opportunities, and I see this in a lot in my line of work. Being othered can stop people from feeling a sense of belonging and feeling valued at work, and this can stop them from speaking up and participating. And then going a little bit wider, from a societal perspective, othering can lead to identity crisis and not feeling accepted or at home in the place you live in.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with all of those points. And I think that often we don't think about how othering impacts our mental health. I've noticed the prevalence of tall poppy syndrome here in New Zealand. This is when, for our listeners who don't know, this is when a person displays an ambitious nature and people around him or her or other poppies try to cut that person down. It's also referred to as crabs in a bucket mentality. What are your thoughts on tall poppy syndrome, and how helpful or unhelpful is this attitude for society?
This is so common. Like you said, tall poppy is when those who stand out are punished, essentially. And there is this unhealthy perception of humbleness that successful people are criticized for being successful. Humbleness, of course, is a great virtue, but you can be successful and humble at the same time. I actually much prefer the term crab in the bucket mentality because I think it's quite funny as well. You know, when you take a bunch of crabs and then you chuck them in a bucket, and when one crab tries to climb out of the bucket and escape, what do the other crabs do? They grab onto the crab that's trying to escape or break free and pull that crab back into the bucket. So this crab in the bucket mindset can happen due to many things, including that deep desire to maintain cohesion. Essentially, the idea that standing out is bad, confirming is good, even if it comes at a cost, and refusing to push past our own limiting beliefs, really.
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, I completely agree with all of that. And I also have noticed that this is just something that I noticed because I've lived in the US as well and New Zealand. I have experienced that in New Zealand, you get accepted for conforming, whereas in the US, you get accepted if you stand out. Like, it's kind of very, mm-hmm. like, because I think the US has a very individualistic society. So, because a lot of the times I'll be, you know, thinking that a lot of my views, opinions, or some of the things that I stand for aren't as readily accepted in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But that's just been my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I agree with what you said about New Zealand. New Zealand is quite an interesting mix of individualism and collectivism. You know, at its core, it is a Western country. There are lots of quote-unquote Western values that you see across the board in New Zealand. But having lived in Sri Lanka and having lived in the UK, I see in New Zealand an interesting mix of both of those cultures. You know, there are lots of collectivistic values, but there are also individualistic values, and that's an interesting mix, and tall poppy could be a result of that.
Yes, I think that's true. So specifically talking about an organizational setting, because you do a lot of work in this area, what happens when we create subconscious impressions about others?
In an organizational setting, othering can impact everything from hiring to promotion. It can stop people from participating, and it can hinder the process of creation and innovation. We talked a bit about hiring earlier. If a recruiter is not aware of their subconscious or implicit bias, they can end up hiring people who look like them, who talk like them, who come from a similar background to theirs. And this can lead to discrimination. It can also be a recipe for failure because diversity fosters innovation. Diversity is a good thing. And we see this very commonly in promotional practices. You know, why do we see a bunch of copy-paste middle-aged white men in the C-suite? Because they hire and promote people who are in their in-group. You know, oh, they look like me, therefore they must be good, therefore I can trust them. I actually have a funny story from someone I know. He took up golf because he wanted to become one of these guys. And it's an interesting strategy. And my friend actually ended up enjoying golf. So that's really great. But the point is, it shouldn't have to be that way if it comes to the cost of having to fit into the main culture, also known as assimilation. And if you're doing that against your who you are as an individual, that can be quite a detrimental thing for your identity. So yes, in the workplace, this can be very limiting, not just for people who are on the receiving end of bias and discrimination, but also for the organization in itself. The consumer base now is extremely diverse. So to achieve success, those who drive decisions need to be diverse as well.
Yes, I completely relate to that. And I think that another interesting thing that I saw on Instagram is, you know how they always talk about diversity and inclusion at work? And I saw someone had kind of posted that it's all right. A lot of companies have their diversity and inclusion practices while hiring, but we would also like to see that in the boardroom. You know, we want that to be reflected, not just in the hiring policies, but also at the top levels. Because a lot of the times, I have heard from my friends and other people that they reach a certain ceiling. You know, when like this is people of color or immigrants who get hired, but then they can't progress after a certain level.
Oh yes, absolutely. And I want to add a comment there where diversity is still largely seen as a tick box. It's a statistic, right? And we need to move past that because inclusion means creating an environment where people from all kinds of backgrounds feel like they're a part of what's going on. They're a part of the company culture. They're a part of the collective vision of the organization. And that inclusion piece takes a lot more work than, you know, hiring a bunch of people who belong to different demographics.
Yes, definitely. And I think that a lot of the times, like specifically my experience in New Zealand, and I was working here in finance for 7 years, I felt like a lot of the time especially in my first few years of working, I had to shed a lot of my culture and beliefs and, you know, kind of become someone who I'm not to fit in, because the first company I worked at, I was the only person of color when I joined that office. And so I definitely have experienced othering. It hasn't been like that in all of my workplaces, but I definitely did experience the othering because I didn't look like everyone and I didn't go to the same schools or the same have the same backgrounds where they came from.
Have the same hobbies, maybe.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So I definitely have experienced that. And also I found that a lot of the time, I've had different experiences in New Zealand, and I have made wonderful friends, and I've had a lot of people accept me for who I am. But I also do recognize that that I did face significant othering. Pivoting slightly from our topic, but not too far off, of course, can you tell me about your PhD research work?
Yes, absolutely. So my PhD is on the topic of psychological safety. So psychological safety is our ability to take interpersonal risks without the fear of negative consequences. For example, in your work environment, are you comfortable asking questions in a meeting, perhaps? Are you okay with expressing an opinion different to the rest of your colleagues without worrying about whether they will like you or whether this will impact your job-related opportunities and so on? So I'm researching psychological safety, particularly what leaders do to prevent and promote psychological safety among their employees, and whether this is different between ethnic minority employees and ethnic majority employees working in New Zealand. I've been working in organizational behavior for a while now, and time again, I see that some work cultures reward people for speaking up and expressing themselves, and others not so much. I myself have experienced this. I consider myself a generally confident person who's not afraid to speak up, but I have definitely been in environments where I've actively held back because I was worried about how it will be received. Lack of psychological safety can be quite problematic whether you belong to the majority group or whether you belong to the minority group, because it creates that invisible barrier that's stopping you from participating at work. But it carries specific importance related to people who come from minorities, because they are marginalized or they experience discrimination, and this can lack of psychological safety can be quite problematic whether you belong to the minority group or the majority group, because it creates this invisible barrier that stops you from participating at work. But it can carry specific importance related to people who belong to already marginalized, discriminated against groups, and the impact of fostering psychological safety at work can be really significant to people who belong to these minority groups. So in a nutshell, that's my research.
That is really interesting, and I can see that it would be quite fulfilling to research.
It absolutely is, yes.
That's amazing. And I think that another thing that I've also noticed, that which is kind of an interesting point, I think that sometimes when you're working, and this can probably is not restricted to New Zealand, but also in probably the majority of Western countries, but there's sort of like a distinction you have to make between your views when you're working and, say, your social or political viewpoints as well. That's why I think a lot of people choose, and that was me included, they choose not, when they're working, even if they have good friends at work, some people choose not to have them on their social media, just because I think they may have certain social or political views that the organization would not approve of. So
yes, agree partially, but I always think it's best practice to not have your colleagues and managers on your social media anyway. That's just my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a wise decision.
And just
coming on to our last question, we all other others most of the time unknowingly. What can we do as individuals to challenge this?
That's an interesting one. One word answer, self-awareness. Is it easy? Absolutely not. Because self-awareness requires shining a light inwards and exploring your own blind spots, weaknesses, shortcomings, biased thinking patterns, and challenging your own limitations. And as you and I both know, this is a really hard thing to do. Self-awareness is too confrontational for most people. And I mean, even if you spent multiple years studying psychology like myself, it can still be a really hard thing. But it's absolutely needed. And it can start by learning what implicit or subconscious bias is. But it is absolutely needed. It can start by learning about what implicit or subconscious bias is, being aware of how you act out of your own biases, essentially. So asking yourself, why do I feel the way I feel, or why am I behaving the way I behave towards a certain person or towards a certain group of people? And also, I think a really practical thing that we can do is to make an effort to get to know people who are different from you. And this can be asking questions, spending time with them, getting to know them as individuals rather than labels. And in the workplace, like I talked about earlier, checking diversity boxes is not enough. There needs to be inclusion, which involves creating opportunities for people who don't fit the status quo and accepting them for the value they bring, because diversity brings a lot of value. I think the bottom line is personal accountability. Also, if you find yourself judging someone or some others, challenge yourself. Make a commitment to educating yourself. And empathy is an important one too. Empathy fosters connection and reduces our tendency to view others as outsiders or as different. And this is a powerful thing.
Yes, for sure. I think self-awareness and empathy are really, really important. And I think that a lot of times, and I completely also agree with the subconscious biases that we have. I mean, a lot of the times we may not realize when we're interacting with people of another culture or ethnicity, we don't realize the implicit stereotypes we hold against them or about them. And a lot of times I found like I make it a point to go out of my way to immerse myself in different cultures and have friends and interact with people from different cultures and ethnicities. But I found that even I sometimes hold certain biases or prejudices about them, which I have to also constantly challenge. And I found that in my interactions, I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to point out a couple of things there as well. Stereotypes, holding on to stereotypes and biases is not a white people thing. You know, we could be a person of minority and we could still have biases against other groups of people or against subgroups within our own major groups. And I've seen this happening, for example, you can still perpetuate stereotypes about your own group of people as well.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that because I saw something funny. Again, I know I make a lot of reference to reels on Instagram, but I saw something funny on by a comedian on Instagram where she said that white people are not the only people who racism. She said that specifically within India as well, there's a lot of prejudices that North Indians and South Indians hold against each other, mm-hmm. or a lot of colorism as well that happens when people think that lighter skin is superior to darker skin.
Yeah, and that's an example of creating subgroups within a larger group and saying essentially, you know, this is the group that I belong to and the group that I belong to is better. And this is the group that the others belong to and that group is not as good as mine. You know, it's a very subconscious way of perhaps feeling good about yourself.
For sure, for sure. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Hansini. I really enjoyed our conversation and I hope you enjoyed being here as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. And for our listeners, please check out the next few episodes and let me know what you think on Instagram on Desified, that's DES.IFIED, or on my personal Instagram, A New Point of View. And please tune in, let me know what you think in the comments and share this with your friends as well if you like it.